Hi everyone, welcome to the Divorced Girl Smiling podcast. My name is Jackie Pilisoff and I'm your host. I'm the creator and editor-in-chief of Divorced Girl Smiling, the website, the podcast, and the mobile app. So I remember the first time I went to see a divorce attorney when I knew I was imminently, it was happening. And I walked into this woman's office and I didn't know anything about divorce, didn't know any of the terminology, didn't know the process, didn't even know one thing, didn't even know what questions to ask. And I actually walked out of her office in tears because I was like, this is so confusing and I just didn't get a good vibe and didn't want this woman representing me. So I have a great guest today who I would want representing me if I was getting divorced. Her name is Catherine Becker Good. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
Catherine is a divorce attorney in Massachusetts. She's been practicing for 34 years. I've gotten to know her in the last month or so. And really, Catherine, everything you say makes so much sense. I love your personalized approach. And I love that you look for compromise and mediation and, you know, you're not a fan of litigation. I just love that about you.
Thank you.
So I wanted Catherine to come on and talk about the article she wrote for Divorced Girl Smiling called 10 Questions to Ask a Divorce Lawyer at Your First Meeting. The reason I think that's important is because I really believe, and tell me, Catherine, if you agree with me, that when you go to see a divorce lawyer, you don't even know what to ask. You don't even know where to begin.
Yes, I do agree with that. Many people really have no idea what questions to ask or where to even start.
So tell me, before we get started on the 10 questions, tell me what a typical meeting is like the first time you meet someone. Now, I know you're going to say every case is different. Some people cry. Some people are more stoic. But tell me, like, in general, what it's like when you first meet with someone.
Okay. So usually one of my first questions to potential clients is, what is going on in your life right now? Why are you here? And then I will usually, in response, get a narrative from them about, you know, where they are, you know, whether it's pre-divorce, whether they're just contemplating divorce, and want to know a little more about the process, whether they're in the middle of a divorce, don't like their current attorney, whatever it may be, post-divorce, maybe they want to go back and change a prior order. But that will give me a sense of how to direct the questions and sort of the narrative during our meeting, because I'll have a better idea of what the issue is for them and can better gauge what questions they might have. And then typically once we sort of talk about their personal case, I will then get a little bit into more of the procedural side of it and what to expect procedurally.
So when these people come into your office, are they stressed, sad, angry? What are they usually feeling?
All of the above. Yeah, all of the above. And I would say sort of the most common emotion, or I don't know if emotion is the right word, but would be that they're confused. And they just really want more information. They want to know whether I would be a good fit for them. Lots of times people get caught up in the lingo and the terminology and the procedure, and they just want somebody to explain it to them and also to know what their options are. Sometimes you'll also get people who will want to know, you know, what rights do they have, given the length of the marriage, or given that they're children, or, you know, maybe they worked or didn't work during the marriage. And so, we can get into all of those. But I would say overall, probably the most common denominator would be confusion on their part.
Right.
And then you do have people who are obviously, you know, if they're thinking about divorce, or if they're about, they want to start if they want to file for divorce, usually there's quite a bit of emotion and they're sad. you know, for the most part.
Now, why is it important to ask questions during your first meeting and to ask the right questions?
Number one, you want to make sure that you and the attorney are a good fit. You want to make sure that perhaps the attorney's style is consistent with your own or how you would like your attorney to approach the situation. So sometimes I'll have people who will say that, you know, they really want this to be an amicable, you know, divorce. And so they don't want me going in, you know, full force guns, you know, guns blazing. They would prefer that I take a more amicable approach and perhaps send an initial letter just saying the person has retained me and, you know, we're looking to resolve this amicably and see what kind of response we get. On the other hand, there's some people who want someone who is very forceful and, you know, they want to know that there's someone who's going to stand up for them. Maybe their husband or the husband's attorney is a bully. They want to know that there's someone who's going to stand next to them and fight for them. So you really need to make sure that the client's needs or wants are consistent with the attorney's approach. So that's one of the reasons.
All right. Yeah. Now, I was just going to say, even this is my advice to my listeners as someone who went and had these initial meetings with divorce attorneys. Well, I only had two. But I would say the reason you should ask questions, even if you don't really understand the answers so much, because it's a learning process and eventually you're going to understand everything. It gives you an idea. Do I like this attorney? Do I feel comfortable with this attorney? Do we have a good fit? Is the attorney listening to me? Am I getting like a canned response? You know, you can tell a lot from a person because you're really interviewing the person and you're going to pay them a lot. So you have to feel really good. And I think that's only something that's a gut feeling when you meet someone in any situation, real estate agent, anything, that you just have a good gut feeling, and you get that by asking questions and seeing the response of the attorney. And you know, you'll know when it's time to stop interviewing attorneys. You'll say, this is it, don't you think?
I agree with you. I do.
All right, let's get to the 10 questions. So you walk in, you have a little chit chat, why are you getting divorced? And after you hear their stories, these are some questions that you recommend that they ask. So the first question is, what percentage of your practice consists of mediation cases, collaborative divorce cases, and or cases that are in litigation? Which process do you work in mostly? Why is that important to ask?
Well, it's important because I think, as I alluded to earlier, it's two very different approaches to a particular case. So if you have somebody who would like to mediate or take a collaborative approach to the divorce, that's very different than a client who wants to litigate the matter. And so you want to, let's say, for example, you're somebody who wants to litigate and sees this as a contentious process. You then want an attorney who has experience in litigation, who spends a considerable percentage of his or her practice in litigating cases. So you don't, for example, want someone who primarily does mediation to handle litigation. So you just want to make sure that the person's background or the greater percentage of their practice is consistent with your approach and how you want to approach the divorce.
But don't you think a lot of times when people come in, they don't really know what process they're going to use? Like, they don't even know what the processes are, which leads
That's
me to
true.
The next question is question number two, what is mediation? What does mediation process look like? So I think you're going to tell me that it's important to learn about all of the different processes, but the one that and if you can mediate, mediation is the best. So tell me about that.
Right. So yes, I'm a big proponent of mediation, but it doesn't always work. And the reason it doesn't always work is because you need to have two parties who are invested in the process and who are willing to negotiate, are willing, you know, to maybe move their position a little bit, are willing to be creative to come up with an agreement. If you have one person who wants to mediate and the other doesn't, and let's say they dig their heels in the sand on a particular issue, mediation isn't going to be successful. So, you know, it's a voluntary process. It's something that people can initiate. And if it doesn't work out, they can always, one or more or both parties can always say they want to end the mediation process and then pursue litigation. But mediation is essentially you work with somebody who is a neutral third party, and that party doesn't represent either spouse. The purpose of the role of that person is to just assist the parties in reaching their own agreement that is crafted to best suit their individual, the facts of their case, you know, their family situation, etc. The benefits of mediation are that typically it's, you know, less contentious, most obvious reason. It also can be a much less costly process. Some mediators will charge just a flat fee as opposed to an hourly fee, which clients tend to like because they know exactly what the cost is going to be up front. It also tends to be a quicker process where you go through the court system a lot more quickly than in a contested divorce. And you know, because mediation, for example, can take anywhere from a couple of months to maybe 6 to 8 months, whereas litigation can be anywhere from usually 6 months to 18 months to 2 years, depending on how congested the court system is. So in answer, going back to the original question, it is important for the client or potential client to know the differences. But usually when you hear their story, so to speak, and sort of what has led them to the point where they're in your office, you can usually get a pretty good sense of whether or not mediation might be appropriate or whether, you know, it wasn't worth the attempt. And sometimes I'll tell people I'm happy to, you know, try to mediate, but if, you know, I don't want you to waste your time either, because you can spend money on mediation only to then have to go back to ground zero when it fails, to then go back to the contested litigation process, hire an attorney, and you're just incurring more and more fees and dragging out the process.
Well, a couple things about mediation. First of all, don't most cases settle in mediation? What's the percentage?
It's a very high percentage. Mm-hmm. Yes, most cases do.
And secondly, some people think, oh, mediation, well, I don't even know what I'm doing. How do I know what I want? The divorce mediator is trained to kind of guide the couple and tell them their options. And they can also tell you what would probably happen if you went to court on this issue, because they usually know the laws in your state, right? So it's not like you're just blindly going in and talking and coming to agreements. You're being guided by a professional.
Yes, with the exception that the mediator has to be very careful not to give legal advice. Mm-hmm. So, and that's sometimes a gray area. For example, you can say to people, this is what I've observed in practicing before, you know, this particular county and the, you know, this particular court. But you really can't give advice or legal advice. That's something that they should seek from outside counsel. Mm-hmm. But in just to give you an example, when I run a mediation, I have sort of, I call it my cheat sheet, but I go through each of the different issues that you need to address in a particular case, from, you know, all of the child related issues to property division, to medical insurance, to life insurance, to taxes, and, you know, and it's a checklist. So I go through so that at the end, I make sure that we've touched on every issue that should be included in a separation agreement, which is the ultimate goal of mediation. And just as a side note, the other day I had someone contact me who just wanted me to redraft their mediation, not their mediation, their separation agreement, because the court had rejected it. And when I looked at it, I realized the reason why the court had rejected it was because it was missing certain key elements that the court wants to be included in a separation agreement. So perhaps one of the most important roles from the mediator, aside from, you know, guiding the clients and assisting them in reaching an agreement, is also to draft a fully comprehensive separation agreement that will contain, you know, not only current issues, but also look to the future and anticipate issues that may arise and address those, so that this contract that you're writing will carry them through into the future, and they then don't have to go back to court and ask for clarification or ask a judge to decide on a particular issue.
You're listening to the Divorced Girl Smiling podcast with Jackie Pilisoff and my guest, divorce attorney Catherine Becker Good, and we are talking about questions to ask a divorce lawyer at your first meeting. Before we move on, I want to mention two Divorced Girl Smiling partners who I absolutely think you're going to want to know about if you are in need of their services. If you are thinking about getting divorced or going through one, or you're already divorced, I want you to look up fraudcoach.com. What is Fraud Coach? Fraud Coach is the website of forensic accountant and CPA Tracy Conan, who has dedicated her career to helping men and women through divorce by creating what's called money guides. So there is the divorce money guide, which will help you find out if your spouse is hiding money. There's the marriage money guide, which will help you to see if your spouse is hiding money. And there's the post-marriage money guide, which will help you with budgeting and learning how to manage your finances after divorce. I'm telling you, Tracy is so smart. These money guides are just a godsend, and you got to check them out. So go to fraudcoach.com, or you can also find Tracy on Divorced Girl Smiling. The other person I want to mention is financial advisor Joanne Lippman. Okay, let me tell you something about Joanne. I have known Joanne for several years. She has been a financial advisor for, I believe, decades. And Jo is divorced, and she's a divorced mom. Jo is one of the easiest people to talk to, especially when it comes to finances. She specializes in helping divorced women with their finances, with budgeting, with planning, with understanding the financials, and with investing, and with insurance. And I just absolutely trust Joanne. I think she's wonderful. You can find her on Divorced Girl Smiling under Trusted Partners. Okay, back to the podcast. Question number four. How long have you been practicing law? Why is that an important question to ask?
Well, again, it depends upon a particular case, but in general, like in any other profession, you really want somebody who has been practicing for a while, whether it be a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, a plumber, an electrician, not to say that people who are newly out of law school can't handle a divorce, but again, depending upon the complexity of the divorce, you may want someone who's a little more experienced. So, especially if it's a litigious case, then you want someone who, has courtroom experience and just, knows sort of firsthand what needs to be done.
Well, I think the reason this question is important, because it does sound kind of like a loaded question, but also when you hear the answer, you are going to get a sense of, is this person burned out? Like, oh, I've been practicing for 40 years, and you're getting the impression that they really want to retire. Or, maybe somebody's really new, but they're saying, I'm under the supervision of so-and-so who's been practicing for 30 years and he or she is going to assist me in court, or whatever. So it's the whole answer that you have to listen to, not just the number of years. Do you think that's true?
I agree. You do have to look at the whole piece.
All right. Next question. Do you have children?
I think that's important if you have a case where there are children involved. If not, it's not obviously, I don't think it's necessarily important, but from my perspective, I think in order for a divorce attorney to just really understand sometimes where a client is coming from with the child-related issues, it helps if they've lived it. It could be something small as, you know, the what happens at the exchange and the child having a meltdown. And I just think if you're an attorney who has sort of lived through those situations, it makes you maybe a little more empathetic toward the client as opposed to somebody who doesn't have children.
Right. And I don't want anybody listening to think that Catherine and I don't think you should hire somebody who's never had kids before. But again, you know, you could ask somebody, do you have children? And they could say, no, but I have six nieces and nephews and I love kids and I understand the parenting, the importance of, you know, being with your kids and parenting, and I really do get it, as opposed to if somebody just was like, oh no, you know, and you can tell like they don't like kids. That would be a problem for me. Next yeah. question is a biggie. Are you going to be working on my case, or do you have associates who will be working on it as well? The reason this is important is because nobody, when you're getting divorced, understands this until you get into it.
Right. Yep. And so oftentimes what happens, particularly if you go to a larger firm, you will meet with the partner or one of the more experienced attorneys. And then when it's time to go to court, you'll find a young associate shows up at the courthouse. And some people are very put off by that because they expect the person that they met with and who they decided to hire to be with them. And that just isn't always the case. And it's not necessarily anything that's deceptive. It's just sometimes it's the reality that, you know, firms do have associates for reasons. And one person, one partner, for example, can't handle all the cases. But it's important, I think, to clarify the client's expectations as to who will be working on their case with them so that they don't, you know, they know exactly who they're going to be working with, what the relationship will be, et cetera.
Exactly. All right. Question number 7, what is the best way and most cost effective way for us to stay in touch?
For me, I usually encourage people to just send me an email, as opposed to a telephone call. It's quick. Even if I'm not in the office, let's say I'm in court, I can typically respond from my phone. I personally don't charge for anything that's less than, you know, it's attorney's bill in 6-minute increments. So anything less than 6 minutes, I don't bill for. So if it's a quick email, I find that's just the easiest and best way to get a more instant, you know, instantaneous response.
You know what is so interesting? There's a lot of firms that do charge even for any email. So I think you're right. The most cost-effective way, and I learned this the hard way, although when I got divorced, email wasn't like it is today. You picked up the phone a lot more back in 2008 than you do now. And so when you pick up the phone, and you start to talk to your attorney, even if you have one quick question, it's going to turn into a longer conversation and you're going to get a bill for it and then you're going to be pissed about it. So my advice to my listeners is if you have a quick question, or let's say you have 2 or 3 questions, bundle them up in one email and just send the email. But I do want to say, and tell me, Catherine, if you agree with me, if it's something that you really feel is important, you never discourage people from picking up the phone.
Oh, absolutely not. No,
you know, you'll know when an email is appropriate, but we're not, Catherine is not suggesting that she doesn't want people to call. It's just more cost effective. So you'll know.
And sometimes you'll get a more prompt response from me because I'm not always in the office and I can't always take a phone call.
For
email. Sometimes email is just the easiest way. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. This is a biggie. Question number 8. How long do you think this is going to take and how much do you estimate it costing?
Right. And from an attorney's perspective, this is one of the most dreaded questions because it is very hard to answer that question without knowing who the attorney is on the other side, because typically that can dictate how the case is going to move forward. So I, for example, I can say to the client, you know, I'm looking to move this forward, you know, in an amicable way and, you know, smooth transition, and let's try and reach an agreement. But if you have someone on the other side who is, let's say, you know, in it for, to, you know, to make a fee, or just is more difficult by nature, it, and let's say it's somebody who likes to file a lot of motions or likes to inundate the, you know, the other attorney with paperwork, that is going to drive the costs up, and it's also going to delay the process. So without knowing really who the other, who's on the other side, it's very difficult to estimate. I can give people sort of a, you know, a minimum and maximum estimate, and the same with both with time and money. But oftentimes it's really hard. That's one of the most difficult questions to answer.
Absolutely. All right, last question. Am I going to be okay?
Am I going to be okay? My answer is always yes, of course you are. And I usually like to tell people that, you know, they will be amazed how much stronger they are and in what a better mindset they are 1 year from then. It's just a right 1 year from now that, you know, through in sort of going through the process, they really will find their inner strength, and they will find a path and a direction and realize that they are going to be okay, and that the pieces are going to fall into place. Their life will actually be better than the life that they're leaving behind.
And I think you have so much credibility in your answer, because you're talking from experience, 34 years of representing people. So if Catherine's telling you you're going to be okay, you are, because she's probably seen it with countless clients.
Yes.
And seen the process of the growth and the empowerment and going from a person with no self-confidence and who's has a lot of fear and who's maybe timid, to blossoming in somebody who has so much more strength and confidence, self-awareness, and grace,
direction,
and courage. Yep. Just really great.
Yep. It's amazing to see the transformation.
Well, Catherine, this has been so wonderful. I think you have so much wisdom and experience and such great advice for people. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
And if you want to reach Catherine or you want a consultation, you can go to her website at cbgoodlaw.com, or you can find her on the Trusted Partners page on Divorced Girl Smiling. And if you want to reach me or read more articles, get connected with good professionals, sign up for the DGS Club, watch videos, and much more, come see me at divorcedgirlsmiling.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you real soon.